Well, howdy, history hoes. Kristen and I are still on break. We just got back from the most magical place on Earth, Disney World. And you're not going to believe this. Kristen is now a Disney adult.
Do not say that. I will sue you.
She stuck her tongue down Goofy's
mouth.
No. She really loves Disney.
Enough about that. Let's dive into part two of our series on JCPenney. This week, James Cash Penney heads out west to Colorado to improve his health and become a successful businessman. He also meets and falls in love with a suspicious divorcee named Berta Hess. JCPenney tried his best to make it big. He worked in several department stores, he bought a failing butchery, but nothing seemed to work out for him until he got a job at a store that was doing things a little differently, the Golden Rule Store, and it would forever change his life. By the way, if you want new content from us, we're still active on Patreon this month. You can binge our entire back catalog of bonus episodes for just $5. Patreon.com/oldtimeypodcast.
Hope you enjoy, and we'll see you next week for part three. Hear ye, hear ye. You are listening to an old-timey podcast. I'm Norman Caruso.
And I'm Kristen Caruso.
And on this episode, it's part two of my series on JCPenney.
Woo! Oh my gosh, Norm, the reviews are in. People are surprisingly excited about JCPenney. Maybe a little too excited.
No kidding.
I think everyone has been wearing their Arizona jeans, putting on their St. John's Bay's finest, and they are ready for this series.
I said, for far too long, no one has talked about JCPenney. My time has come. Yeah, thank you all for the kind feedback on part one. Very excited to tell you the rest of this story. We've gotten a lot of comments that say, Norm is a good boy, and this podcast is doing well. So people are doing their homework, you know?
Yeah. Seems kind of silly that you assign that as homework to people. And yet here we are, ready to learn more about the man, the myth, the legend, JCPenney.
He will be a legend no more after this series.
What do you? Oh, no.
Well, he won't be a legend because, like, you'll know the story. It's, like, the truth.
Oh, you
know?
I thought
a legend.
Norm, I thought secret Nazi. That's what I thought. When you say,
oh, God, no.
Yeah, you. Okay, well,
no, sorry.
All right.
Sorry, did I get, like, maybe I'm not saying the definition of legend.
I feel like you might want to hit up Webster's for the definition of legend. And while you do that, I should plug our Patreon.
Our legendary Patreon.
Yes. No Nazis there, we're pretty sure.
Well,
we're always checking.
We did have Adolf Hitler on as a guest.
Yeah, but he hates the podcast. Famously hates the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a true story. Everyone on our Patreon, if they have a Tesla, they bought it years ago. And they've got the bumper sticker that explains the situation.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Now, if you want to join this Patreon, and of course you do, why wouldn't you? There's no reason why you wouldn't. You just got to get on over there to patreon.com/oldtimeypodcast. Let me tell you what happens at the $5 level. You're not ready. What happens is
back rubs.
You get, ew, no one's going to touch you.
That'd be a sweet deal for $5.
I would be so alarmed if someone offered me a massage for just $5.
That's too low. It's too low.
I mean, it's
of
like
price.
The joke about Arby's.
Right.
The five for $10
roast beef sandwiches.
It makes us all uncomfortable. Please charge more. We'll feel better about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, you really derailed me, sir.
I apologize.
A $5 massage will do that. At the $5 level, no one will touch you. Instead, we will give you immediate access to all of our bonus episodes. And boy, are they stellar. They come in video form, my friend. You could just listen if you just want to listen, but I recommend the video. We've got some funny episodes on there. Also some sad ones now that I'm thinking about the one we just released.
Whoops. And some gross ones.
Well, yeah. You
I'm
know
responsible
what?
For those.
Something for everybody, really.
Mm-hmm.
You also get into the Discord to chitty chat the day away. And hold on. What's that?
Huh?
What's that?
What is it?
You're saying you really love this podcast? You're saying you do want Norm's $5 back rub? Well, head on over to the $10 level. That's the pig butter investor tier.
We don't give back rubs on the $10
level. Norm will show
either.
Up at your house with a bottle of lavender massage oil.
Make sure you put the correct address in Patreon because I don't want to show up at some random person's house.
Yeah, he doesn't want to look like a
creep. With a bottle of baby oil and say, I'm here for the massage.
At the $10 level, you get all the things I just mentioned, plus a card with stickers and our lovely autographs. My goodness. Of course, you know, Norm will also hand deliver that and it'll be covered in oil. I don't know if that affects the monetary value. Hopefully not. You also get 10% off merch. Do we have any merch in the merch store right now? No, don't worry about it. That's just something you'll enjoy later. Maybe also, though, you get early ad-free episodes. Video episodes mm-hmm. of this podcast. Can you tell I didn't write this plug down? It's
we
coming
can
off
all
the top
tell,
of
Kristen.
The dome.
Absolutely. The ADHD is firing on all cylinders.
Oh, and what's that? What's that? You missed my old, rotten, decrepit podcast, Let's Go to Court? Don't worry, baby. You sign up on our Patreon, you get all the bonus episodes for that podcast, plus ad-free episodes of that podcast as well. My goodness, what more could a person want?
Nothing.
A $2 massage? I don't
about,
recommend
how
it.
How about the end of this Patreon plug?
Norman! Norm's a man who likes structure. And that's what keeps it so spicy in this relationship.
That's right.
Pure chaos coupled with a man who says, is that floor level? Doesn't look level. Hang on, let me get my level.
I do have a few levels.
I know.
Got a nice 4-foot one.
Oh, my God.
It's my favorite.
Okay. Right.
Patreon.com/oldtimepodcast. Thank you all very much. And with that, let's jump into part two of my series on James Cash Penny Jr. But before we dive into part two, let's recap part one.
Previously on an old-timey podcast.
We learned about the humble beginnings of the man who created America's greatest department store.
Okay. Well, maybe.
James Cash Penny Jr., a.k.a. J.C. Penny. Got something to say, Kristen?
Have you heard of Nordstrom?
I do love Nordstrom.
Continue.
But it's no J.C. Penny. J.C. Penny was born in 1875 in Hamilton, Missouri, a small railroad and farming town about 70 miles northeast of Kansas City. His father, James Penny, was a Baptist preacher, a politician, although not a very good one, and a well-respected leader in the community. James Penny was a strong, sensitive man. He believed in self-reliance, honesty, and the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated. And he instilled those ideals into his children, including J.C. Penny. They would serve him throughout his life. J.C. Penny had to learn quickly, though, because his family was poor. At the ripe old age of 8, his father told him he had to start buying his own clothes. Thus began J.C. Penny's lifelong career in business. And along the way, he learned valuable lessons. First, he tried raising pigs. If he got them real fat, stinky, and greasy, J.C. Penny could really bring home the bacon. But his father told him to get rid of those damn pigs. Why? The neighbors were complaining. The lesson? Put people before profits.
Or pigs.
Next, J.C. Penny worked as a grocery store delivery boy. But his dad made him quit that job, too. Why? He discovered the grocery store owner. Say it with me, Kristen.
Well said, Norm. Grocery store owner. We say it just fine on this podcast. Never had a problem with it.
Yeah, we might have to roll the tape on that one. Well, James Penny discovered that owner was putting cheap coffee beans into expensive brand canisters. The lesson? Work with integrity. J.C. Penny's final idea was to sell watermelons outside the county fair, but then his dad shut that down too. He thought his son was taking advantage of sellers inside the fairgrounds who had paid for the right to be there. The lesson? Be fair to others. J.C. Penny was like, damn, Dad, go easy on me. I'm 8 fucking years old.
Oh, language.
I know, but those lessons were valuable to him. He was learning the qualities of being a good businessman. But after high school, J.C. Penny sought a different path. He wanted to be a lawyer. Unfortunately, he soon learned that wasn't an option. His family had no money to send him to law school. James Penny knew his son was smart and would succeed. He wanted him to have a better life than he did. So he got his son a job at the local dry goods store, a place that you guessed it, only sold dry goods. Clothes, textiles, accessories, groceries, and more. The pay was insulting, but JCPenney learned the business. He became a great salesman. He kept the store clean. He organized inventory. He was thriving at this new job, and he really enjoyed it. The Hamiltonian newspaper was correct when it predicted that Jim is a good boy and we believe he will succeed. JCPenney's father felt like he was going to go places. Unfortunately, James Penny wouldn't live to see his son's success. In 1895, he passed away at the age of 53. JCPenney was devastated. He had learned just about everything from his dad. Now he was gone. That loss motivated JCPenney more than ever to succeed. He worked tirelessly. Eventually, that hard work caught up to him. His body was exhausted. He was at risk of contracting tuberculosis, aka consumption. JCPenney's doctor recommended he head out west to a better climate so he could recover. And so that's what he did. In June of 1897, the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 21-year-old JCPenney hopped on a train to Kansas City, Missouri. From there, he would venture out west. And that is where we will pick up our story today.
Had he heard of an epilator?
Uh-huh. A what?
An epilator.
What's that?
Something to take care of that bushy tail.
What the hell does that mean?
That was just a joke.
What's an epilator?
It's a terrible device. I fell for it online, Norm. It cost us a good $80. It's a hair removal device.
What? You bought this thing?
Yeah, it's a hair removal device that people are like, oh, it does hurt a little, but then you get used to it. Let me tell you something. I tried it yesterday. I don't know, man. I want to hold all those influencers down and personally tweeze out all the hairs on their body. As revenge.
Wait. How does it remove hair? Please provide more detail on this device.
I don't know how this torture contraption works exactly, but it's supposed to basically tweeze a bunch of your hairs all at the same time. It's horrifying.
Tweeze them at the same time?
I mean, I'm tempted to go get it and use it on you.
You should. After we do the episode, I think we should try it.
Okay.
Tweezing two hairs at the same damn time.
Oh, you'll wish it was only two hairs. Anyway.
Tweezing 50 hairs at the same damn time. Right in the butt crack. Where do you use an epilator?
Well, I thought I would be pretty bold with it, but then I tried it on a few
places.
Where
did you use it?
Don't worry. You know, this is the top of the episode. This is no time. I don't know why you brought it up, frankly.
I think we all know who actually brought it up.
Continue, please, with the episode.
So, Kristen. J.C. Penney was on a train heading out west.
Ugh.
Damn good movie.
Yep.
But Kristen, he wasn't going to some tiny Dust Bowl town with a corrupt sheriff and former outlaws who always say,
I don't do that stuff no more.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
We all know what you're talking about.
No. JCPenney was on his way to beautiful Denver, Colorado.
Ooh, okay.
At the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. Colorado was a booming state thanks to the mining industry. During the 1890s, Colorado's population increased by 30% to 1.5 million people. Adjusted for inflation, there were 20 billion people living in Colorado.
Wow.
And Denver was the biggest city by far because it was the primary railroad hub. And the people living in Denver had money. There were a ton of businesses, banks, concert halls, big mansions with gorgeous architecture.
Do you know about some of the cool stories? Get that future topic sound ready. There was a madam who, like, ran Denver.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. If not, we'll have to cut this, and boy, will I be embarrassed. But I've looked into her for a future topic. Oh, Norman!
I don't have the ding, wow. So I had to use the fart.
great.
So, JCPenney arrived, and he was a little taken aback by the sights and sounds of Denver. It was such a big change from his home in Hamilton, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no time to relax, because he needed a job. Now,
His whole point in going out there was to relax, right?
Yeah, but he needed money, too. You got to live, baby.
Sure. Okay.
Now, his doctor had recommended he get a job outside, you know, for his health. Get some fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
But that idea got thrown on the back burner when JCPenney saw the department stores in Denver. They were enormous. These stores were fancy compared to the dry goods store back home. Uniformed attendants to check your bicycle at the door.
Oh.
Daily advertisements in newspapers, store-wide sales, the finest clothing, home appliances like ice boxes or ice cream makers, curtains, baby carriages, clocks, stationery.
Norm, you seem too excited.
Widgets.
What's a widget?
It's a fictional product. It doesn't matter.
What is that from?
Back to School.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic film. And you're right, widgets does not matter. Not a real thing. All you need to know, Kristen, is that JCPenney ignored his doctor's orders and immediately applied for jobs at these department stores.
Okay.
With him, Penny had several letters of recommendation. One of those letters was from his old boss back in Hamilton, Missouri, John Hale, the owner of J.M. Hale & Brothers Dry Goods Store. The letter said Penny was honest, smart, hardworking, and quote, "The only reason he left my employment was because of health." With a recommendation like that, getting a job would be easy, right?
Well, it just occurs to me, it must have been so easy to just lie back in the day.
What do you mean?
Well, I would write a letter of recommendation saying Kristen Caruso is the best woman who's ever lived. She epilated her whole body, no problem. She's tough as nails, and she'd be an amazing employee. The only reason she left my employ is because she was too good for the job. I said it myself.
She was way too good at this job. Took us a little extra time with the epilator on her back, but, you know, we got through it.
Hey, the letter doesn't there. Hey, it's not a novel. It's just a letter, okay? P.S. Please write to me if you would like more information on the hair removal process.
So, wait, you're saying you would write your own letter of recommendation?
Well, what would stop anybody? Oh, I'm from far out of town, but here are my letters of recommendation. Oh, guess what? They all say I'm amazing.
Hey, hang on. Perhaps that letter of recommendation is sealed with wax on an envelope.
That doesn't make any sense because—
And it has the stamp of J.M. Hale & Brothers.
Okay, well, that's great, but I'm assuming he's applying to multiple places.
He is.
So someone's going to break that seal.
Maybe he got multiple letters of recommendation. Why are we talking about this?
Well, I'm just pointing stuff out. Okay, go ahead.
You're talking about how you would scam people
I'm just saying it's really easy. It just seems really easy.
I mean, yeah, it's a little harder to verify back then. I'll give you that, Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you think he's going to get a job pretty easily, right?
Well, no, because of the way you worded that.
Mm. Well, you're correct, Kristen. So, at the first store he applied, JCPenney met with a very cold, angry, bitchy owner.
Oh.
The guy brushed off his letters of recommendation. He was like, I don't have time to read letters.
Yeah, that you clearly wrote yourself.
Besides, they don't mean diddly dick. And by the way, don't even try stealing from this store. I'm like a hawk. I'll catch ya.
Why do you think he was going to steal?
JCPenney was a little confused, too. He was like, what? Is theft that big of a problem here? Or is this guy just like cuckoo bananas?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Anyway, JCPenney did not get a job there. He kept applying. Some stores said they weren't hiring. Others just paid way too little. But finally, he found a decent job at the Jocelyn Dry Goods Company. There's a jewelry store here called Jocelyn's Jewelry.
That is not how it's supposed to be.
It's Jocelyn's Jewelry, but the guy on the radio is like, Jocelyn's Jewelry. He's like got something in his mouth or something.
His dentures are loose, Norm.
That might be it,
too. That's 100% it.
Well, congrats to JCPenney. He got a job at Jocelyn's Dry Goods Company.
You know, it's too bad because Jocelyn's Jewelry was going to sponsor us, but then they heard this.
Yeah, right. Dare to dream, Kristen. The hours were long. 9 to 13-hour days, 6 days a week.
Oh.
The pay? $6 a week. Adjusted for inflation, about $230 a week.
Yikes-a-roo.
Yeah, not great, but not bad. It was enough.
It seems pretty bad.
Well, it was enough for JCPenney to rent a room at a nearby lodging house and save a little money every paycheck. And he thought with his hard work and determination, he could make a name for himself in the business. Mm. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. His co-workers didn't like him. They thought he was a foreigner from Missouri.
Okay.
A goody two-shoe.
Well, sure.
Non-threatening. Some of his co-workers tried to take advantage of him. Not in that way.
Norman, okay. Those of you who have the video version, please confirm. I was not giving a look like I thought it was sexual in any way.
She was about to make a joke.
I was not. I was sitting here silent.
Okay. Okay. Well, you have to pay $10 to verify it. Please do.
Norm's taking advantage of you monetarily and sexually, I'm pretty sure.
They get something in return. So one time, JCPenney was showing a woman some quilts, which was a somewhat expensive item at that store. Pretty good profits. And just as he was about to close on that sale, another guy swooped in and was like, "Oh, hello, miss. James, I'll finish up this transaction. Thank you."
Oh, bullshit.
JCPenney lost his ever-loving mind. After the woman left, he confronted that coworker and said, quote, "If you ever do that to me again, I will thrash you."
What does that mean?
Thrash is when you do this. You take your fists and you pound them.
It looks like it looks like you don't actually hit the guy at all. It looks like you just wear yourself out.
Now, you know when Donkey Kong's at the top of the construction site in the arcade game?
Yes,
and he's like this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's a thrashing.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
Look out for barrels.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, you wouldn't believe it. JCPenney was transforming into a threatening boy.
I mean, it sounds like he needs to.
Yeah. The coworker was not intimidated in any way. He snickered and walked off.
Asshole. I hate that.
After that happened, JCPenney decided to quit. He didn't like the working environment. It felt unfriendly, impersonal. He also didn't like how angry he got. He knew that if his father was still alive, he would not have approved.
Mm.
But JCPenney soon found another job at a dry goods store down the street. But even there, he found trouble.
Did you ever have people pull shit with you when you were young and non-threatening and all that in the workplace?
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
I did, too.
Yeah, I worked at a restaurant.
Why did you say it so weird?
Restaurant.
You've never heard of this line of business before. It's called a restaurant.
It's a French word.
Uh-huh.
Restaurant. Yeah, I was 18 and a dishwasher.
Uh-huh.
And I looked like I was 12. And
sure.
So, yeah, the kitchen staff was pretty brutal to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It was tough.
It's funny. When you told that story, I thought back to my job when I was 18 and I worked at a restaurant. And I remember, so I was a waitress and they had something like five shifts. You were like supervised. You were in training with another server. And the deal was that other server got all of the tips because in theory, they're the ones doing the training. They're the ones kind of doing all the work. I remember on my final day of training, God, eventually I've got to let this go. It has been, oh my God, it's been 20 years. It's been more than, oh my God.
Uh-oh, you just had a realization how old you are.
Oh, Lord, this guy, I'm trying to pretend like I'm not still mad. This man showed up completely hungover for the shift and just sat at the bar the whole time, head in his hands, didn't do any work. I did all the work.
And he got your tips.
Well, here's the thing. I did all the work, which was fine. It was the last day of training. I mean, it was TGI Fridays. Yeah. We weren't like building rockets or anything. It didn't even occur to me that he would be such a douchebag as to then take all the tips. But you bet your ass he most
you
certainly
bet your
did.
Ass he did.
Can you believe? Yeah. And I didn't stand up for myself. I was just like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was the same way. I didn't stand up for myself either. And in fact, I thought those guys picking on me were very cool.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah.
And looking back, I'm like, man, those guys were fucking losers.
Yes.
They were absolute losers.
Yes.
And but yeah. But you know who did stand up for me? My fellow dishwashers. They
oh,
all
really?
Loved me. Yes.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Kind of banded together, you know.
That's very sweet. That is a sad and common occurrence when you're really young and new mm-hmm. on a job.
Yep.
Is the loser assholes want to take advantage of somebody and not yeah. sexually, hopefully, but.
Well, it's all projection. It's just they got bullshit going on in their life.
And yeah.
Take it out on poor little non-threatening Norm.
But, you know, the good thing is we don't hold on to that anger for 20 years because that would be really pathetic, right?
Yeah, especially so to say it on a podcast.
We're totally over it. I mean, what was it, like $60 max? Where it's not a big deal.
Maybe that guy's listening and he'll sign up for our Patreon.
He better sign up at the $10 level.
Yeah, with inflation, he's going to have to subscribe for 3 years.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, JCPenney found another job at a dry goods store down the street. But even there, he found trouble. One day, he was organizing some inventory, and he noticed two pairs of the same men's socks had different price tags.
Mm.
One pair cost a quarter. The other was two pairs for a quarter.
Oh.
JCPenney was a little confused by the different prices. So he took the socks to the store owner and asked which price was correct. The owner looked annoyed and said, "Young man, mind your own business. You're here to sell things, not mark them. Do as the price mark says. Sell the socks for 25 cents a pair if you can. If you can't, sell them for two pairs for a quarter."
Wow.
You see, Kristen, this store owner was using a business practice that was common during the 1800s, but quickly falling out of favor.
Mm-hmm.
It was called differential pricing or double pricing. Sometimes stores would sell items without prices at all. You'd pick up an item, go to the counter, and have to ask, "How much is this?" Then the clerk would look you over and decide what to charge you.
Norm, people know because no one skipped my Mother's Day episode.
Oh, I'm getting to that, Kristen. Okay. Don't you worry. Luckily, this practice was falling out of favor thanks to a department store owner named John, I want to make up.
Wow, you didn't have to do that again. I think that was just fine in one episode.
It's the greatest joke I've ever said on this podcast. Oh. John Wanamaker believed, quote, "If everyone was equal before God, then everyone should be equal before price." Hey, we learned a little bit about him in Kristen's Mother's Day episode. Previous topic.
Oh, you could have given me the gong thing for my other idea?
That is for previous topics only. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
As the sound engineer, I made that call.
Wow.
See, this is what I love about history, though. Like, the more you learn, the more you see how everything is connected.
Sure.
Yeah. It's really cool. Like a giant spider web. Despite John Wanamaker's best efforts, some stores did still try to take advantage of people, such as marking the same items with different price tags and seeing what happens. It's no wonder the phrase, "let the buyer beware," became a popular saying during this time.
Gross.
JCPenney thought differential pricing was extremely unfair. He had experienced it growing up. Farmers like his father were often charged unfair prices by railroad companies to transport product. Differential pricing? Try that in a small town. I guess they did. So JCPenney did what he thought was right. He said, quote, "There was no use in continuing to work in a store that supported such a policy. I asked for my wages, I got them, and then I left."
Yeah, I hope he snuck a pair of socks with him, although, no, he's too ethical.
Mm-hmm. He would never do that. Things weren't going very well for James Cash Penny Jr. He hated the city life. He missed home. Small town vibes. He was more comfortable there. He felt like he understood the people better there. So JCPenney decided to leave Denver. He looked around for opportunities in nearby towns, and he soon found one about 35 miles northwest in Longmont, Colorado. A local butcher and bakery shop was up for sale, which to me seems like a very strange combo. A butcher and bakery.
What's wrong with that?
I guess nothing. I don't think I've ever seen a butcher bakery before.
I think it makes perfect sense. Get your meats, get your pie. Maybe you got a mincemeat pie.
Get yourself a nice New York strip and a donut. Although Italian delis kind of have that vibe because you can get deli meat and Italian cookies.
Yeah, so. Your world is being rocked by something you've experienced many times in your life.
I have never been to a butcher bakery.
Okay.
Lay off. So this was obviously a much different job than working in a dry goods store. But JCPenney believed he could do it. He grew up working on the farm. He took care of livestock with his dad. He knew meat. And hey, he'd get some outdoor work in too, just like his doctor suggested. And he'd be running his own business. He could work for himself.
There we go. That's the key.
The only problem was JCPenney needed cash. He didn't have enough. So he wrote home to his mom, Mary Frances Penny.
She has no money. This is ridiculous.
Hang on.
Okay.
JCPenney had actually left his mom a big chunk of change from his savings to help out with the farm.
Okay.
He left her about $300. Adjusted for inflation, $12,000.
All right.
And now he wrote home to his mom and asked, "Mom, an opportunity has come up. Can I please have that money?" Mary didn't hesitate. She sent him the full $300.
Wow.
Yeah. And with that, at the tender age of 23, JCPenney was the brand new owner of the Longmont Meat Market and Bakery.
Wow. Okay.
But boy, was he in for an uphill battle. That business was not doing well at all.
Well, okay. I was going to say, you'd have to have a pretty big staff. Right? And you'd have to be covering a lot of hours because bakers, I mean, here's the thing we know about bakers.
What do we know?
Well, we've established on this podcast, if you're a baker, you have to be a woman with big pleasant hooters. That's just what I've got in my head.
Right.
Also, worst part about it, you got to wake up at the ass crack of dawn to get bacon and then not bacon from a pig, but, you know, get to stepping.
Right.
And then, you're just out of your mind tired by 3 p.m. And a butcher, I assume, has totally different hours.
Yeah, I would assume so.
And he's doing this whole thing?
I'm sure he had some employees, but...
Well, that $300 can't go too far.
Well, you know, that was just to buy the business. And the business wasn't doing very well, and that's probably why it was cheap to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Customers constantly complained about finding Rocky Mountain oysters and their chocolate eclairs.
Norman.
JK. You know about Rocky Mountain oysters?
No. Why don't you tell us, Norman?
They're bull balls. Deep fried bull balls.
Goodness. Have you ever had one?
Goodness. No. I have not. I had to think about it.
I love that you really thought about it and you were like, did one slip into my mouth one time? Not sure. Nah, I'm going to say no, but not confidently.
Did I slip under that bowl? I can't remember.
You've had a lot of skateboarding accidents.
Anyway, JCPenney was filled with determination to turn the business around. He cleaned, he organized, he trimmed the fat. He took out ads in the local paper that stated his store was, quote, a first-class meat market and bakery. Everything neat and clean. Always a full, complete line. Men are gentlemanly and accommodating. Give it a try!
Wow. A meat market where the men are gentlemanly and clean.
And accommodating.
I bet a lot of dudes showed up and were mightily disappointed.
Back rubs?
At the very least.
How big of a slab of ribs can I put you down for?
Everyone. Okay, now if you're not at the $10 level and you're not seeing the video, count yourself lucky, ironically, because Norm just did a massage on an invisible man that didn't look consensual.
Oh, they were looking to purchase. I made the sale. Unfortunately, the business continued to struggle. Competition was tough. There were a lot of other butchers in Longmont. Older, more well-established businesses. In fact, the only reason JCPenney's business was staying afloat was from one customer, the Imperial Hotel. Oh. It was the largest hotel in Longmont, Colorado. JCPenney's store supplied the hotel restaurant with all of their cuts of meat. But that business relationship came with a catch. The head chef at the hotel restaurant demanded a bottle of whiskey with every order. And he was like, hey, as long as I get my whiskey bottle, I'll keep buying meat from your store.
Mm.
Now, this arrangement had been in place before Penny had bought the store. And when he took over, he just kept doing it because he was like, I need the business.
Well, it's your only customer.
It's my best customer, whatever.
Yeah.
But as time went on and the more he did that, the more he didn't like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
For one, JCPenney wasn't a fan of alcohol, a.k.a. the devil's squirt juice.
Don't say the devil's squirt juice like it's a thing anyone has ever said.
That's
before.
An old-timy phrase
no,
for alcohol.
Not. No,
yes, it is.
Not.
I'm surprised you didn't come across that in your Carrie Nation episode.
Yeah, I'm also surprised.
Yeah. Hmm. Second, this was basically a bribe. That's not a way to do business. JCPenney thought about his dad. What would he do? Well, that made the decision easy. JCPenney went to the hotel chef and said, hey, I want to do business with you, but I'm not giving you a bottle of whiskey anymore. And the chef was like, okay. And he immediately ended their contract.
Right.
JCPenney later wrote, I did not regret taking the stand, but it was a costly lesson.
Yeah.
A costly lesson indeed. JCPenney decided to abandon ship. He sold the business, paid off his debts, and was officially back to square one.
Wait, how long did he last?
Couple months.
Oh, geez. Well, okay, that's... I'm sorry.
Mm. Yeah. What?
Okay.
Uh-oh, we're about to get an epic rant from Kristen here when she starts with, okay.
Well, I did have some beef with JCPenney's dad. No, this is no joke.
Old beef, meat market / bakery. Okay.
He took a lot of principled stands.
He did.
That I think put his family at risk and put his family in danger.
Who? His father? JCPenney's dad?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's interesting to me that his mother is the one who, after the dad dies, says, hey, go out there, do your thing. And actually, you know what? No, I've got this on my own. Here, take your $300. Like, she is the one who seems to really be teaching self-reliance.
She was a little different in how she dealt with her children and raised her children.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely she was. But this thing right here of, I've got one customer who is keeping my business afloat.
Yep.
And I'm going to break this deal we have. Wouldn't it be so much smarter to just build up your business to the point where one ruined business relationship wouldn't tank the business?
I mean, yeah, but JCPenney felt icky about the relationship.
Right, but how else are you going to live?
I think he had confidence in himself that he could find work.
Okay.
And he wanted to do business his way.
Okay.
You know, he wasn't going to change who he was or his principles over a freaking bottle of whiskey.
Okay.
I also don't know if he really liked that job. I think he wanted to own his own business, but I don't think his passion was in running a butcher bakery.
Well, it would be a shame if it was, because I think this is a weird reason to tank a business.
Hmm. Yeah, this butcher bakery / back rub store didn't work out.
Okay.
He's back to square one. He doesn't have any money. He's looking for work. But he didn't look very hard for work because there was actually one place in Longmont, Colorado, that he really wanted to work. He shopped there frequently. The prices were great. The owners were honest. They were from Missouri, just like him. The vibes in that place were stellar. It reminded him of home. It was a dry goods store, and there's no doubt that JCPenney really appreciated the name of the place. It was called the Golden Rule Store.
Oh.
So let's talk about the Golden Rule Store. The Golden Rule Store had been in Longmont, Colorado since 1889. It was owned by a husband and wife team, Tom and Alice Callahan. The Callahans were from Humansville, Missouri.
Oh, my favorite town. Definitely not full of aliens. Humans only. Don't worry about
it. That's right. It was a town built by aliens who were trying not to arouse any suspicion.
So they picked the perfect name.
What? Oh, no, this is Humansville. This isn't Aliensville.
What a weird thing to say.
Weird to accuse me of being an alien.
Oh, my God. I think you're an alien.
So Tom and Alice Callahan were from Humansville, and they were inspired to open their own store by Tom Callahan's mommy, Celia. Mommy Callahan ran her own dry goods store in the small town of Chillicothe, Missouri.
Oh.
The home of sliced bread.
Wait, is it Chillicothe or Chillicothe?
Ooh, good question.
Thank you.
Let's look it
up. I thought of it myself.
Hang on. I'm actually not sure. Chillicothe.
Wow. The research is really lacking. I'm going to write that down.
Oh, Norm says that to me all the time, so I'm going to throw it back in his face. Chillicothe.
Oh, boom! There goes the boom! Ready or not!
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, Chillicothe, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Home of sliced bread.
When you drive through, they've got a big slice of bread.
Well, they have a big loaf of bread.
Yeah, yeah.
With one slice.
Yeah. We should also clarify, it's not actual bread. That would be moldy and disgusting. But it is kind of like, all right, they're proud of this here, and well, I don't blame them.
You can pull over and take a big old bite out of that, son. So, yeah, Mommy Callahan ran a dry goods store.
Why are you calling her Mommy Callahan?
Well, we don't need to remember her name. It's Mommy Callahan.
Well, she was a businesswoman. Give her some respect.
You know, Celia.
Yeah.
Celia Callahan.
Probably Celia, right?
Celia.
Uh-huh.
Celia.
You know, if you don't shape
Silicone
up,
Callahan.
I'm going to put two pieces of bread on either side of you and just eat you up, buddy.
Call me an idiot sandwich.
Oh, no.
That's a Gordon Ramsay
insult. I know. I would never.
As I was saying.
Celia.
Celia Callahan had a dry goods store in Chillicothe, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's pronounced Missouri.
Missouri. And Celia Callahan had it going on, baby. She ran her business a little differently than other stores. She sold her items very, very cheap. She barely marked up the price. She even accepted alternate methods of payment, like chickens or eggs. Old school bartering, baby. Her son, Tom Callahan, was like, Mom, what are you doing? This isn't a good business model at all. Everything's way too cheap. Well, Celia Callahan was like, Nonsense, sonny boy. This is what the community can afford. It's the best way to do business. And Celia Callahan was right. That store was a huge success. People were flocking to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Callahan was like, Wow, if you sell product for cheap and move inventory quickly, you can make a lot of money off of volume of sale.
Yeah.
Sell a ton of stuff cheap. Tom and Alice Callahan wanted to try that business model for themselves. So they scouted for possible locations, and they found the perfect spot in Longmont, Colorado. It was a small town near the railroads, and there wasn't much competition. So in 1889, Tom and Alice Callahan officially opened their new store, the Golden Rule Store. The name conveyed honesty, good morals, fair business practices, everything they stood for. The Golden Rule was also a very popular saying at that time during the Victorian era.
Mm-hmm.
It was influenced by, religious movements and a rising middle class and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's total bullshit. We all hate it. Don't you agree?
Yeah, it's not true at all.
I do like how the way you're like, the Golden Rule. The Golden Rule is good, Norm.
I know.
Okay.
I'm just saying it's like not an original store name idea.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
I'm not trying to shit on their parade. I'm just saying.
Sure.
No, the Golden Rule is awesome, and I do think that's how businesses should run.
Okay.
Their store sign was bright yellow, which
well, obviously
stood out to residents walking along the dusty streets of Longmont. The local Longmont newspaper announced the opening, writing, "A very cozy little store has been opened on Main Street by Tom Callahan." Whoa, passive voice. Holy moly. The store carries a carefully selected stock of notions and gents and ladies furnishing goods. Mr. and Mrs. Callahan are constantly on hand to welcome their customers.
Wow.
The Callahans were all about getting people into the store. Their ads showed off handkerchiefs, blouses, corsets, overalls. That's not how you say overalls. Overalls. Overalls.
Joe, do not do any editing to that. We need everyone to know the alternative pronunciation to overalls.
That is how someone from Humansville, Missouri, yes, would ask to purchase a pair of overalls. Do you have any overalls?
I would like to put these overalls over my corset.
They had overalls, jeans, dress pants, shoes, and more. And beside every item, a price. And that price was the same for everybody. And because the Golden Rule store relied on volume of sales, inventory had to move quickly. So prices were cheap. The average markup on a product was 33%. So if they bought an item for a dollar, they sold it for $1.33.
What were other stores at the time marking it up to?
Honestly, whatever they could get away with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it wasn't just low prices that got people in the door. The Golden Rule store had weekly sales. Each week, a new item. There were walk-in promotions. A free artificial violet just for stopping by. Holiday sales like the 4th of July. Save on hats, shoes, underwear, and school supplies. Tom and Alice Callahan also had a policy that was somewhat unheard of for a dry goods store. You ready for this?
They let wet stuff in.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
They were cash only.
Oh.
No credit.
Okay.
So that was somewhat controversial because farmers usually relied on credit to get their supplies.
Mm-hmm.
But the Callahans thought credit was too risky. They were like, hey, our prices are so low, there's no need to get credit. And they were right. The locals flocked to their store. They had quality items at low prices with friendly vibes. They loved it. The Callahans were raking in the big bucks, and they took that money and they reinvested it into their business. They expanded the store. They bought new equipment. They installed fancy glass cabinets and solid oak countertops. It really elevated the space, and it made the shopping experience even better. These small town folks from Longmont, they weren't used to having such a nice store.
Yeah. And when they overhauled the overalls, no one knew what to do with themselves. Norm, you looked really unamused.
I was like, where is this going? And then I started thinking, did I say overhaul earlier? And I said that weird too.
You'll never speak again.
Hell no.
The next.
I'm filled with determination, just like JCPenney.
Oh, you're a good boy, Norm, and
thank
we believe
you.
In you.
Imagine that as a bumper sticker. Norm is a good boy and we believe he will succeed.
I am imagining it, and I'm imagining it especially on just random cars.
Yeah,
the owners
that's
are
my
not
idea.
Named. Oh, so just some random dude named Phil. He's got a bumper sticker that says Norm is a good boy and we believe he will succeed.
Yeah. I want to sell it in our store. We have no merch, so that'll be our next
show. Sure,
product.
Sure. And I bet you 10% off. Those fly off the shelves.
We could just leave a blank space and then you could write whoever's name. In
no,
there.
No. It's only Norm. We only believe in Norm.
Oh, well, I support this.
Hmm.
The Golden Rule stores use their cash-only policy as a bargaining chip with suppliers. Twice a year, they would travel east and buy product. And when you buy a large amount of product with cash, you're going to get some pretty damn good deals. And speaking of product, the Callahans knew their products well. Alice Callahan was considered an expert in the latest ladies' fashion, and she personally selected what women's clothing would be sold in the store. Alice was like, hey, even in these small towns, the ladies be shopping. They want to look their best out here, too, not just in the big cities. Overhead costs were low, too. The Callahans lived behind the store, and that allowed them to keep the store open for as long as possible. The Golden Rule store was open 6 days a week, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., except for Saturdays when they stayed open until 10 p.m. for farmers.
Good Lord.
Mm-hmm. The Golden Rule store was recession and depression proof. During the panic of 1893, the store kept thriving. With low prices and a cash-only policy, it was maybe the best place to shop.
I'm surprised they didn't get robbed.
That's a good point.
Well, all this cash?
Yeah.
And it's the 1800s?
Yeah.
You can only bury it so many places.
Well, and that's why you know, the corrupt-ass sheriff, and you got to call the former outlaw and say, you have to help us. And they're like,
I don't do that stuff no more.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
An advertisement during the Panic of 1893 stated, hard times made easy at the Golden Rule store. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
So all of this to say, The Golden Rule store was a big success, and the Callahans expanded quickly. They had stores in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Illinois, and Missouri.
Good grief.
And the more stores they opened, the more their buying power increased with suppliers. Oftentimes, when a business expands, owners can lose control of what makes that business special.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Callahan wanted to avoid that. So to run new stores, he didn't use outsiders. He wanted people he knew he could trust and worked hard. He brought in family members, close friends, or employees that had proven themselves.
Sure.
And they became partners with him in the business. The Callahans actively encouraged their salespeople to work hard, learn merchandising, and open their own Golden Rule store.
I mean, that's a lot of trust in a lot of people.
Yeah. And this is how they were able to expand so quickly, bringing in partners to co-own new stores. Now in 1898, as JCPenney was looking for a job, he decided that the Golden Rule store was the place for him.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. He thought, if I can just get my foot in the door, I can do really well here, and maybe one day I can run a store of my own.
Hell yeah.
So he strolled into the Golden Rule store, and he met with Tom Callahan, and he asked for a job. JCPenney was surprised when Tom Callahan recognized him. He was like, oh, hey, you're the guy who runs that butcher shop.
Oh.
Tom Callahan knew the locals well.
Mm-hmm.
JCPenney was impressed, and he replied, well, I actually don't run it anymore, and I'm looking for a job. Mr. Callahan, if you give me a job, I'll show you whether or not I can sell stuff. I can prove myself to you. Tom Callahan appreciated the eagerness, but said, well, I've got all the permanent help I need right now, but one of our clerks is out sick. He got his balls crushed by a falling anvil.
Norman.
Hmm. I may have misread that quote. Okay, I'm just kidding. The clerk was out sick. I don't know why he was out sick or what happened to him.
No word on his balls.
His balls may have been crushed by a falling anvil.
We can't rule it out.
So Tom Callahan asked, do you want to come in for the holidays and work while he's away? And JCPenney didn't hesitate. He was like, yes, sir, I do. Penny thought that he could make such a good impression that Tom Callahan wouldn't want to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And Penny was right. He worked as a sales clerk and he was kicking ass. He showed up to work early. He cleaned. He organized. He asked a ton of questions. He wanted to learn everything. And Callahan was happy to share his knowledge. JCPenney felt right at home at the Golden Rule store. Still, there were a few things about the store that he thought should change. So the main one was he thought Tom Callahan was a little too chill. He was a little too lax with employees. He didn't really keep a lot of tabs on them.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like this guy is doing the first franchise-ish thing ever.
Well, not ever.
I'm exaggerating a little, but this does not sound like some relaxed, chill guy. Sounds like maybe he's got serious anxiety and a desire to prove himself.
So, like, some people might think, like, well, that's a good thing. You should be a little chill on the job and, like, don't be a micromanager, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
But JCPenney thought that lack of attention was hurting the business overall. One time he noticed a pile of men's suits with a very specific pattern that just weren't selling. And JCPenney was curious, so he went to the salesman in charge and he asked, hey, you know, why do you think these suits aren't selling?
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with this? And the salesman was like, oh, well, between you and me, I really, really like this suit. And I don't want anyone else in Longmont to wear it. So, you know, I want to peacock it. So I don't push these on the customers.
Oh, that is bad. That is bad.
Yeah. JCPenney was like,
what the fuck?
He was like, that is no way to do business.
Yeah.
Penny thought, when I run my own store, I'm going to keep a better eye on my employees. So despite a few differences, JCPenney was incredibly grateful for his tutelage under Tom Callahan. He said that Tom Callahan's influence, quote, cast a long, long shadow. It would forever change his life. And I agree. In my opinion, JCPenney, America's greatest department store, does not exist without Tom Callahan.
How about Alice?
Yes, yes. Shout out to Alice Callahan as well. After the 1898 holiday season, JCPenney's prediction came true. Tom Callahan was like, I think I'd like to keep you around a little longer. He put JCPenney in charge of managing inventory. Penny spent most of his time at the Golden Rule store. Work gave him agency. It gave him hope. It also allowed him to meet a lot of the residents of Longmont. And JCPenney took quite a liking to one of them.
Ooh.
It was a young lady named Berta Alva Hess.
My God.
What's wrong, Kristen?
Well, when the sexy new character enters the scene, I'm expecting a more
sexy
alluring name.
Name
than Berta Hess. But, you know, hey, my last name's Pitts.
Yeah,
so
yeah, you got no room to talk, lady.
Well, I wish for a more attractive name. That's why I married you, Kristen Caruso. Now, that's a beautiful name.
How about...
What? What? He's
no,
got
let's
nothing.
Move on. Let's
yeah,
move on.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
Kristen, you'll be happy to know that Berta Hess was the exact same age as JCPenney.
I am thrilled to know that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of these old-timey stories where people are sniffing around kids.
Oh, wait, actually, hang on.
Oh, wait, hang on. She was 12.
That seems suspicious to me. Hang on.
Mm-hmm. Bad research. I mean...
That is bad research. Berta Alva Hess was actually older than JCPenney.
Oh! By how much?
Looks like 7 years older than him.
Goodness. All right.
Why did I write down they were the same age? They're not the same age. Berta was older than him.
Okay.
She was born in 1867. He was born in 1875. She was a short queen, 5'3".
I knew it from the name Berta.
Hmm. She was absolutely adorable when she reached for a box of Kellogg's Bait No More cereal at the top shelf. She had rich brown hair, naturally gorgeous. Mm. Kristen, please look up a picture of this woman.
Okay.
I think she's beautiful.
Well, calm down. You're married. Mm.
But Berta is long gone.
Berta Penny. Oh, my goodness. I accidentally Googled Bert Hess, and boy, that's a different thing. Ooh. Oh, my Lord.
Isn't she attractive?
Yes, that right there is a gorgeous woman. And she's 5'3".
Mm.
Well, you know, I think it was on our bonus episode when I said that the most adorable height is 5'2". Wait, did I say that on last week's episode?
I think you said it on the bonus episode.
I can barely listen to myself. 5'2", I think, is the most adorable, but 5'3", also adorable.
Very adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah, JCPenney certainly outkicked his coverage.
Sure.
You might be wondering, Kristen, how is a hottie like that still single?
She's a widow.
She was divorced.
Scandal!
Mm-hmm. Berta Hess had been married before at the age of 19, but it ended in divorce. No children. It's unclear why she was divorced. However, it sort of made Berta a pariah in Longmont. Divorce was quite rare back then, and divorced women were considered suspicious. People thought, oh, she's divorced? There must be something wrong with her.
Absolutely.
What do you think, Histrios? Are divorced women suspicious?
Wow.
Mm. But James Cash Penny Jr. didn't care about any of that.
Well, no, because she was super hot.
She was super hot. He knew what he liked, and he didn't care what other people thought. He thought Berta was beautiful. He loved talking to her when she came into the store. And Berta Hess returned the feelings. As she got to know JCPenney, she appreciated how ambitious he was, how independent he was, how confident he was.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, a relationship blossomed. Berta would frequently show up to the Golden Rule store and bring JCPenney lunch.
That's sweet. What kind of lunch did she bring? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Oh.
Maybe some Rocky Mountain oysters and a chocolate eclair. She also liked to advise him on ladies' fashion and how to sell it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They were madly in love. And for the first time in his life, JCPenney thought, wow, I can see myself marrying this woman and settling down and starting a family. Ooh.
Oh, what's that record scratch for?
Tap the brakes there, Mr. Penny. Remember that sales clerk who had been out sick from an anvil falling on his balls.
Yeah, he didn't recover. We all forgot about him.
No, he came back to work. And JCPenney was like, fuck, man, am I going to lose my job?
No, you're not going to lose your job.
He was worried he would.
Okay.
He marched up to Tom Callahan and was like, be straight with me. Do I need to look for another job? Tom Callahan expected JCPenney to ask that question. And he replied, not if you'd be interested in working for my partner and I in another town.
Oh, okay.
Tom Callahan offered JCPenney a job as a sales clerk at one of their newest Golden Rule store locations, Evanston, Wyoming.
Oh, that's a good hike away. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is Berta coming?
Nope.
Oh.
You'll see.
Okay.
The store was owned and run by a fella named Guy Johnson.
Are we sure he's not a porn star?
He's real, baby. Guy Johnson was a former sales clerk at the Longmont store, and now he was part owner and running this new Golden Rule store in Evanston.
Cool.
JCPenney couldn't hold back his excitement. He was like,
yes! Yes!
He was like, hell yeah, I'll take the job.
I mean, yeah, that's great. That's a huge move up.
Yeah. This was another step toward his dream of running his own store. So in March of 1899, JCPenney moved to Evanston, Wyoming, a mining and farming town located along the Union Pacific Railroad. Population? Around 2,000.
Oof.
Guy Johnson, who was very real, hired JCPenney as a junior salesman with a salary of $50 a month, adjusted for inflation, about $2,000 a month. JCPenney's goal was to impress the pants off his new boss.
Well, that wouldn't be hard because he's clearly a porn star.
Hey, Penny, I'm going to go on my break. I got to film something.
Hmm.
Oh, wait. Cameras hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah.
Hmm. I got to record something on this phonograph.
Norm, I don't think you're
I gotta
really.
I got to take a photo of my penis in the back.
I like how the way you said it sounded like it was going to be all euphemisms, but instead it's just, I'm going to take a photo of my penis.
He's a straight shooter. He doesn't bullshit, okay? So yeah. JCPenney's goal was to impress the pants off his new boss.
Mm-hmm.
But how would he do that?
Sorry. Just show up with a pizza?
Oh, my God.
You know what? I'm alarmed by how immature this podcast is.
Me too. Shameful. So how would he impress his boss? Well, his old boss back in Hamilton, John Hale, he had always told him that the best salesmen know how to sell old stock.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what JCPenney was going to focus on. He would study the products inside and out, and he would try to turn over inventory as quickly as possible. JCPenney was a man on a mission. He spent practically all of his time at the store. He had a one-hour lunch break every day, but he only used 30 minutes of it.
Okay, that's kind of pathetic. He needs to cool it a little bit.
He was filled with determination.
Okay.
When he wasn't selling stuff, he was cleaning and organizing the store. JCPenney later wrote, "The days were not long enough. I was happy in my work and as deeply interested in the store as if it were my own. Often I went home at night and was unable to sleep until I had got up, dressed, and gone back to the store to make certain that everything was in its place." Hey, if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life.
Okay, but you also have to have work-life balance. You've got to not burn out. You've got to...
What if you love your job? This is his passion.
Okay.
What if your job was epilating hairs off your body?
I would quit immediately.
What if your job was to watch Survivor and paint your nails?
I mean, then I'd be great at it.
Yeah.
Except for this season, it's very giving corporate retreats, boring. I already told you about this.
Yeah, Kristen's not a fan of season 48.
I don't know what season we're on. I just know, everyone, don't judge me. I know it's a stupid show, but I got sucked in the pandemic. Now I can't quit. Now these
don't
later
be
seasons...
Don't be ashamed of your love of Survivor. It's a perfectly cromulent reality show.
Shut up. But yeah, it's giving corporate retreat. But anyhow, go on with your little tale.
Kristen's upset because there's no villain this season. Everyone just loves each other and it's all hippy dippy and oh, we hope everybody wins.
I feel like lately they're getting away from reality show villains. And I would really, what I've discovered, my toxic trait, I love a villain.
Just put Tiffany New York Pollard on Survivor. Oh my God. And that would be incredible.
That would be the most incredible season ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I would demand she has to stay in for at least 4 episodes.
What'd she call Johnny Bananas on that show?
A saber-toothed...
Saber-tooth-headed motherfucker.
I don't know, but sheer brilliance is that woman.
I agree. Well, JCPenney's hard work paid off. His boss, Guy Johnson, also a porn star, according to Kristen, he took notice of Penny and promoted him to head sales clerk, and this gave Penny more responsibilities. He did the cash deposits, he recorded sales, he ordered merchandise. Penny's knowledge about the business grew immensely, and for the first time in a while, he felt really secure about his job and his future. And maybe now was the time to settle down and start that family. That summer, he wrote to his girlfriend.
Ooh.
He wrote to Berta Hess and he said,
"Let's get married and make a baby."
And Berta replied,
"Yes."
Oh, okay.
And so in August of 1899, they got married in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And make a baby they did. A little over a year later, in January of 1901, the Pennies had their first child, Roswell Kemper Penny.
Okay.
So that Kemper name piqued my interest. It was a family friend that his dad knew, the Kempers.
Okay.
No idea if it's related to that Kemper family, which is a very rich family in this area. Ellie Kemper from The Office.
Yeah.
She's from the Kemper family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're related in any way. Probably down the line somewhere.
Sure.
Who knows?
Not you. You didn't research it.
It requires further research. I have a lot to talk about, okay? I can't be spending all my time looking up these little titty bitties.
Oh, okay.
So calm down. The new Penny family had a happy life. They had a tiny house in Evanston. Penny was doing well at his job. And they were trying to save money in the hopes that one day JCPenney could become a partner in a Golden Rule store.
Yeah.
Berta supported Penny's dreams all the way. He wrote, "In my wife, I had my first and invaluable partner."
Aww,
that's sweet.
Everyone, we're looking at each other with lovey eyes.
Yeah, we are. You're my partner.
Oh, my. Hmm.
Well, luckily, JCPenney wouldn't have to wait long for his dream to come true. Later that year in 1901, Guy Johnson, owner and manager of the Evanston store, came to JCPenney and said, "Hey, Tom Callahan and I are going to open a new store, and we've decided we want you to take charge of it as a partner."
Yes! Yes!
Things are moving fast.
Yeah.
This is great.
Finally, JCPenney's very own Golden Rule store.
I take back my bullshit about how he should have stuck it out with the butchery bakery combo deal. This is great.
JCPenney wrote that the offer, quote, "fired my very soul with a desire and an ambition to be somebody."
He has a dramatic streak and I enjoy it.
You love to see it. But there is one issue. Money. The Pennies had only saved $500 up to that point. And it would take $2,000 for JCPenney to become a one-third partner in that store.
Wow.
Tom Callahan and Guy Johnson stepped up and they're like, "Hey, no problem. We will loan you the $1,500 that you need at an interest rate of, let's say, 8%. JCPenney went home and discussed it with Berta. And Berta was like, "You know, I bet you can get a better rate somewhere else."
Oh, okay, Berta.
Mm-hmm. So JCPenney contacted some banks back in his hometown of Hamilton, Missouri.
Yes. All right.
And Berta was right. A bank offered JCPenney $1,500 with an interest rate of 6%.
I like that a lot.
What do you like about it?
I feel like it would complicate things a lot. You're already in business with them, and then you would also owe them money. You know, better to owe money to the bank, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. When JCPenney told Guy Johnson he was able to get the money from a bank loan, Johnson laughed and was like, "You went to all that trouble when you could have gotten the loan from us? Why?" Penny replied, "I saved 2%.
Yeah.
$30. And all it cost me was a postage stamp."
Mm-hmm.
Kristen, that's the kind of thing your dad would be so proud of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have really leaned into that uncomfortable conversation where the guy tried to laugh like he was the ridiculous one.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad would have eaten that up with a spoon.
It would have become a legendary Daryl Pitts story.
You would hear about it again and again, whether you wanted to or not.
You've got it. Anyway, it was official. Tom Callahan, Guy Johnson, and JCPenney were going to open a new Golden Rule store as partners. Now, I do want to clarify, they were only partners in that store.
Right.
JCPenney didn't have interest in any other Golden Rule store.
Well, yeah, that would be insane if he had the entire company.
But the next question was, where do we open this new store? Tom Callahan and Guy Johnson had always opened Golden Rule stores in small towns with potential for growth. But this time around, Guy Johnson had his eyes on a bigger place, Ogden, Utah. Ogden was on the Union Pacific Railroad, midway between Salt Lake City and Evanston. It was growing quickly. Population, 35,000 people.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
much
huge. Yeah. Yeah.
So the partners visited Ogden, Utah to scout it out. And Johnson was all in. He was excited. He was like, "Wow, look how busy this place is."
Mm-hmm.
J.C. Penney commented that he was, quote, "as excited as a boy on circus day."
We're all picturing it.
That's right. Johnson turned to Penny and was like, "Well, what do you think?" J.C. Penney did not share Guy Johnson's excitement. He remembered his experiences in the big city of Denver.
Yeah.
It was impersonal.
J.C. Penney was like an elephant on circus day.
Oh, like Dumbo. Yeah, he remembered working in Denver, and he hated it. It was way too competitive. It was impersonal. And if they wanted to compete in Ogden, they'd have to open a really big store.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger the store, the bigger the risk. J.C. Penney replied, "I don't want to come here. This place is, well, it's too big." Johnson replied, "Too big? How could a place be too big to do business? Where do you want the store to be?" For J.C. Penney, it was small towns all the way. Golden Rule stores had always thrived in small towns. You know, Penny could get to know the residents and what products they wanted in the store. You know, for Penny, that was the right way to do business.
Mm-hmm.
Penny's choice was a small town in Wyoming along the Oregon Short Line Railroad. It was called Kemmerer.
One more time?
Kemmerer.
Okay.
K-E-M-M-E-R-E-R. Kemmerer.
Gotcha.
Population, 900.
Well, good Lord. He loves a really small town, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. Callahan and Johnson had doubts about Kemmerer. Kemmerer.
I also have doubts.
I have doubts on it if I'm pronouncing it right.
Sure.
For one, Callahan had actually known some people who tried to open a store in Kemmerer, and it failed. And they had told Callahan, stay away from that town.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another problem. The local economy. Kemmerer's biggest employer were the railroads and mining companies. And those companies paid their employees once a month.
Mm.
And those companies also had their own store. So families could buy basic necessities from the railroad or mining companies and then have that amount deducted from their paycheck.
Okay. And you're doing a cash business.
Right.
In a community of people who have no cash.
Right. So yeah, why would anyone shop at a cash only store in town? I mean, it could be a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
JCPenney thought, you know what? I just want to go check out the place for myself and then we'll decide. So he took a trip to Kemmerer and found a lot of positives. He saw that, yeah, there's a lot of miners and railroad workers, but there is also a lot of farmers and ranchers. You know, many came into town from a ways away just to buy supplies. JCPenney also discovered that an oil company would soon be there to start drilling for oil. He was like, ooh, that could bring a lot of money to the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, he visited the local hardware store. Penny said that, quote, a busy hardware store in a community means the kind of people I understand and like. And it was a busy hardware store. So JCPenney was dead set. Kemmerer, Wyoming, all the way. Callahan and Johnson were uneasy, they really trusted JCPenney. They were like, hey, he's a new partner. Let's go with his choice and we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah, and Guy and Tom are pretty wealthy by this point, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So they're really not risking as much.
Oh, no. This was a far bigger risk for Penny.
Yeah.
He's also got that loan, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we know.
Yeah. Guy and Tom are paying cash. And yeah, Penny's got the bank loan. So, well, on April 14th, 1902, the Golden Rule store officially opened in downtown Kemmerer. It was JCPenney's very first store. His store was stocked to the brim with work clothes, church clothes, home and pantry staples, and more. Berta and JCPenney put in work to make that store a success. They handed out flyers with prices to 500 local miners.
Whoa.
They advertised in the newspaper. Berta worked the register while baby Roswell slept in a crib underneath the counter. JCPenney frantically worked the sales floor, helping customers and tidying up. The store was open every day from 7 a.m. until, quote, no more people in the street seemed to be heading for the store.
Oh, my God. This is exhausting.
So usually it was 7 a.m. to midnight were their hours.
God.
To further save money, the Pennies lived above the store in an attic space. They got water from a nearby well, and they pulled it up to the attic window with a bucket and pulley system.
Oh, jeez.
They used packing crates and shipping boxes as furniture. JCPenney's instincts proved to be right. The Kemmerer store flourished. People loved the low prices, the great customer service. They loved how clean the store was. A lot of folks came from out of town, you know, visiting the store only maybe once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And JCPenney made it a point to remember who they were. He kept notes on them. He wrote down their names, what their sizes were, what styles they liked.
That's really great. I mean, that's...
Yeah, in a tiny town like that, that is... That's really good.
Yeah.
The rough and tumble local customers who worked in the mines or on the railroads, they were, quote, quick to notice a different atmosphere, which made them feel welcome and appreciated.
Yeah.
In particular, immigrant workers, many from China and Japan, they loved the Golden Rule store. They faced rampant discrimination during this time, but not at the Golden Rule store. They felt welcomed.
Well, you know, it's funny thinking about those company stores.
Yeah.
Those were known to take advantage of people.
Oh, they definitely did. They had ridiculous prices on stuff.
And they had you by the balls, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only place in town. You're paid once a month. You're struggling. And so, yeah, here's this new store, and they don't treat me like a piece of shit when I walk in there.
Yeah, and I think residents realized right away, whoa, I can get way better deals at this Golden Rule store
mm-hmm.
than buying from my company. That first year of business was a smashing success. The Pennies turned over their entire inventory 4 times.
Wow. I do love this. I think I have I get the heebie-jeebies when I hear about someone working their tail off, taking no lunch breaks, not going home for a business that isn't theirs, but this is partly theirs.
Right.
And
much different.
It's a world of difference.
Yeah. I mean, we own our own business mm-hmm. and I do feel pride when I put in the hours and it's like, I'm trying to make our business grow. Like it's a good feeling.
I'm glad you said that first because I was feeling silly because obviously we do not work 7 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week, but we've been, but
sometimes we have long hours, but
well, no, we do have really long hours. And I think especially because this podcast has been around for a year now, and especially when we first started it, we had no time to figure out what's this podcast going to be? What are we going to name it? What, we had no time to do that.
What should the podcast be about?
Yeah, and we just knew we had to come up with something very quickly.
Yeah.
No rest, keep going, keep going, keep going. And so, I don't know, there is something kind of cool about this, that they opened this store and they worked their butts off.
Yeah, Berta and JCPenney both put in long hours and it paid off for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. In total, that store sold $29,000 worth of goods. Adjusted for inflation, a little over $1 million. They made a profit of $8,500. Adjusted for inflation, $316,000.
Hell yeah!
Of course, those profits were split three ways,
right,
with the partners. So Tom Callahan, Guy Johnson, and JCPenney each made about $100,000 profit in today's money.
Okay.
Callahan and Johnson were super impressed by what JCPenney and Berta had accomplished. They were so impressed, in fact, that they offered JCPenney a partnership in another Golden Rule store, this time in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Apparently, that store was not doing very well, and they thought, Penny can turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
Penny agreed. Twice a month, he traveled 50 miles to Rock Springs to manage that store. The following year, in 1903, proved to be an extremely busy time for JCPenney. He went on his first buying trip for the company. Kansas City, Missouri.
Ooh.
He mingled with manufacturers and dealers. The Kemmerer store was busy as hell. JCPenney started hiring more employees to help out. Unfortunately, turnover rate was high. Penny had developed a reputation around town for being a kind of difficult boss. His standards were insanely high.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, he thought Tom Callahan was too lax with his employees.
I do recall.
JCPenney was on the opposite end of the spectrum. He frequently spied on his employees.
What?
Penny always claimed he wasn't spying, he was studying them.
No.
He was looking for potential. Did an employee come back early from lunch break?
Oh my God.
Was the floor clean enough to eat dinner from?
Hmm.
Were their sales continuously going up? So that kind of management did rub some people the wrong way.
Did they pay really well?
They paid pretty well, yeah.
Okay, I would hope so.
Yeah.
If I'm being surveilled,
Big Brother is watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Penny was like, oh, finding good help sure is hard around here. So he called on his family back in Hamilton, Missouri. And soon enough, his sister Pearl and his brother Herbert moved out to Kemmerer to work in the store. With more customers and more employees, the Kemmerer store expanded and moved down the street to a bigger location. JC and Berta bought a home nearby for their growing family. That year, they had another son, who they named Johnson Callahan Penny.
Wow.
Everyone called him JC Jr.
Mm-hmm.
What's this? Plaque alert?
Oh, okay.
So that Golden Rule store and the Penny's home nearby, they're both still around today.
Really?
Yes. So the house is a museum.
Uh-huh.
And that Golden Rule store, it's now a JCPenney.
Shut up!
It's known as the Mother Store. It is store number one.
Hell yeah! Oh, we gotta go.
Okay.
How far is it?
So we are going this summer on a Pitts family vacation to, I don't know, somewhere in North Dakota or something. I can't remember where we're going.
Norm pays excellent attention to the group text.
I did look how far was Kemmerer from where we're going.
Uh-huh.
It's like 6 hours away.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like the southern part of Wyoming.
Okay. Another trip for another time.
So yeah, that store is known as store number one. It's part JCPenney. It's part museum. It's got a ton of original knickknacks and items from the early 1900s on display. Very cool. I do hope one day we get to check it out.
Let's make it happen, Captain.
Anyway, back to our story. Even though things were getting really, really busy, JCPenney said that those days in Kemmerer were, quote, the happiest times of my life.
Hmm.
And I totally get that. You're like, you own your own business.
Yeah.
You're making money. Your family's growing. You have family from Hamilton living in the town now. It's just...
You're finally successful.
Yeah.
Like, really successful.
Yeah.
In your personal life, in your professional life.
He's probably feeling very fulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Callahan and Guy Johnson couldn't be more thrilled. Profits in both Kemmerer and Rock Springs kept going up. They called Penny a hustler.
Hmm.
He had their full confidence. So when JCPenney pitched the idea of opening another Golden Rule store in a nearby mining town called Cumberland, Callahan and Johnson were like,
yes.
Yeah, sure. In Cumberland, JCPenney was once again a one-third partner in the business, and once again, the store did really well. Little titty-bitty, Cumberland, Wyoming is now a ghost town today.
Oh, man.
Which are always kind of creepy, but...
also kind of cool.
Very cool as well. Two things can be true. But, you know, soon JCPenney found himself with a new problem. He was, as DJ Khaled would say, suffering from success.
Is that something he says?
That's one of his album names.
Oh.
Suffering from he's like doing this pose, you know, kneeling, looking
sure,
down, and the
sure.
album's called Suffering from Success.
Absolutely.
It's great. So what was his problem? He had a ton of cash. He was like, what the hell do I do with all this money?
Oh, that's terrible. Mm,
horrible. JC and Berta talked it over. And Penny admitted to her he had a bigger dream. He was like, someday I'm going to have a chain of these stores all over the mountain states. And she was like, how many do you want? And he was like, 50.
Whoa.
I want 50 stores.
Whoa.
Why 50? It just seems like a good number.
Yeah.
I want 50 stores. But Penny always thought that's a long-term goal. That's going to be a while.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't as far off as he thought. In 1907, a major shakeup in the Golden Rule store put everything into motion. During that year, JCPenney noticed a big drop in communication with his partners, Tom Callahan and Guy Johnson. And he was like, huh, what's going on? And he eventually learned why. Callahan and Johnson were arguing. Mm. They had, quote, personal and business disagreements. And as a result, they told Penny that they were ending their partnership and their friendship.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not clear what exactly the problem was.
How did the partnership end exactly?
I'll get to it.
Okay. Sorry.
You're real excited, aren't you?
I am intrigued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not clear what their disagreements were about, but sometimes businesses don't work out. Sometimes friendships don't work out. Sometimes things just aren't meant to be. Callahan and Johnson may have ended their partnership and their friendship, but there was one thing they both agreed on. They said, okay, well, if we're going to sell our joint interests in Golden Rule stores, we're only going to sell them to one person, James Cash Penny Jr.
Yeah.
So JCPenney finally found a use for all that cash. In late 1907, he became the sole proprietor of all three of those Golden Rule stores in Kemmerer, Rock Springs, and Cumberland. The price? $30,000.
That seems like a steal.
Adjusted for inflation, about $1 million.
Huh. You really don't know what happened?
I don't. And I do want to clarify, Tom Callahan and Guy Johnson had other Golden Rule stores.
Right.
They were specifically ending any stores they were joint partners in.
Okay.
So like Tom Callahan had 100% ownership of several Golden Rule stores. So he was keeping all those.
Sure.
I think Guy Johnson may have had some too. But yeah, specifically, they were no longer going to work together in a joint partnership.
I like the honesty of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the cleanness of it. Of like, yeah, we'll just sell our shares and be on our way.
Yeah.
It's not always that clean.
No, it's not. That whole incident might scare some people into going into a partnership again.
Right.
Might seem too risky. You know, one partner could bring the whole business down.
If it's 50-50, they absolutely can. But if it's not 50-50, you're probably okay.
Well, again, I don't know this for sure, but I do believe Callahan and Johnson did own some stores 50-50.
Okay.
So I don't know what they did with those. But, you know, just the whole idea of you're in a partnership, one of your partners, you know, you don't get along anymore.
Right.
It's scary. Like, what can happen to something right. you've built for years?
Sure. Yeah.
But none of that scared JCPenney. He truly believed in the Golden Rule store business model. It reflected everything his parents had taught him back in Hamilton: honesty, integrity, self-reliance, equality. Hell, it was in the name. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Penny was filled with determination.
How many times are you going to say that?
It's from a game I like called Undertale.
Okay.
You know the little plaque I gave you? Despite yeah. everything, it's still you?
Yeah.
You know, that's where filled with determination comes from.
I do
from
love
as well.
That.
Well, Penny was filled with determination to own 50 stores, and he knew the best and fastest way to do that was to find good quality workers, train them, and partner up with them. That business model had worked for him. It's what got him into this position, and he believed it could work for others. The year was now 1908. A recession the previous year saw profits go down, but really not much. Again, Golden Rule stores withstood economic uncertainty very well. JCPenney was 33 years old. He had a wife, two children, three successful stores. Over the next few years, JCPenney would expand his business. He brought in new partners, family members, friends, hardworking employees, and that dream of owning 50 Golden Rule stores would quickly come true. On the next episode
oh my God.
Of an old-timey podcast, the Golden Rule stores transform into JCPenney stores.
What?
Yes, sir.
This has been a really interesting episode.
Yeah?
Yes.
What did you like about it, Kristen?
I love the, I don't want to call it the early years because I think of that as like a person's childhood. But those years when somebody's trying to figure things out and then they finally, after working hard at a bunch of different things, they finally find the thing and they just hit the gas.
Yeah.
I love it.
It was great that he saw this store and he just knew. He was just like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is where I need to be. This is where I will be successful. And he just went full throttle at it and like it really paid off for him.
Mm-mm-mm.
And to have like a supportive partner in Berta.
Yeah.
Who like worked the store with him, helped him save money.
Told him, don't take that 8% loan.
Yep. Let's save some money on that loan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is all very fascinating to me. I didn't know about the Golden Rule stores. I just thought JCPenney started JCPenney. I didn't know he kind of transformed an old store into JCPenney. You know what I mean?
I'll be honest. I didn't know any of this because why would anyone?
Well, that's why an old-timey podcast exists.
For this reason right here.
That's right. We want you to walk into JCPenney and really fucking appreciate it, okay?
Before they all shut down.
I want you to go to the nearest sales clerk when you walk in. Just give him a hug.
Oh, hey.
And just say, thank you. Well, ask first.
Yeah.
Can I give you a hug? And say, thank you. Thank you for working here.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. God bless you. You know, maybe, you know, Trump just announced he was going to do victory in World War II Day and victory in World War I Day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I could petition for a JCPenney Day. April 14th.
Why not?
Which April 14th, I believe, is the day the Titanic sank, too.
A lot to celebrate.
What should we celebrate on that day?
well told, Norm. My hat is off to you. My overalls are off to you as well.
Your overalls are off too.
I'm so thrilled by this episode.
You're getting completely nude, huh?
I've got a corset under it. You know, the works.
Am I saying corset wrong? Is it corset or corset?
Oh, I've got you thinking all kinds of things. No, you said it correctly. I was just making fun. Oh,
boy.
He's.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm filled with determination.
I wondered what that was.
I'm a good boy and I will succeed.
Speaking of which, I was going to wrap up the episode with some comments to read to you.
Oh, Spotify comments, perhaps?
Okay. It's funny. I was planning to do Spotify comments. First, tell the people how we are brilliant podcasters and just learned about Spotify comments.
We've mentioned it in several recent episodes. People know that we are idiots and we didn't know you could leave comments on Spotify. So we've been enjoying going back and reading all the comments. We're playing catch up right now.
Where is the app on my phone? La, 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 la.
Hey, what did the tomato say to the other tomato when he ran ahead?
Say that again.
What did one tomato say to the other when he ran ahead?
Don't worry, you'll catch up.
Damn. you're good.
Well, I mean, come on. Norm, I'm going to read you some comments on your most recent episode.
That would be JCPenney Part 1.
Yes, it sure would. This first one comes from Gissy Bean. Mm. Gissy Bean writes, Norm is a good boy, and he is already successful. Isn't that you. Sweet?
Thank you. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of those comments. It's very sweet.
Mrs. Nesbitt also says, Normie C is a good boy, and I believe in this podcast.
Oh, thank you. Are these all just comments saying Norm is a good boy? How many comments say Norm is a good boy?
A lot of comments are telling you that you are a good boy. Oh, I do want to read you this one.
Okay.
Matthew Holt says, Normie C is a great boy, and this podcast is already succeeding. Also, even though I'm from Indiana, I still appreciate you.
Man. I did rile up the Indianans.
No, see, I think this speaks to their character because so far everyone from Indiana has been really sweet about you being such a jerk.
I wasn't a jerk.
Yeah, you said.
Sorry, are they? They're not Indianans. I guess they're Hoosiers.
Yeah.
Call themselves the Hoosiers.
Yeah, you were a real turd about it. You complimented their gummy bears and.
So good.
Yeah, but you just shat all over their great state. Here's a longer comment. This comes from. The effin' audacity.
Oh.
The effin' audacity writes, Norm is such a good, non-threatening, successful boy that he can take any topic and make it into a podcast episode that's interesting to listen to.
Wow.
As someone with a worthless history degree, I greatly approve of and appreciate this hilarious podcast. Norm and Kristen do an amazing job at making history fun. This has quickly become my favorite podcast. And if you give it a chance, you will not be disappointed.
Thank you. As someone else with a worthless history degree, I appreciate that.
Wow. Anyway, thank you all for the Spotify comments. We appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who has rated and reviewed us. It really, really helps.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And I'm blown away by the feedback on the JCPenney series.
I have noticed you started with no confidence and now you are filled with determination.
I am.
It might be the Rocky Mountain oysters, might be the chocolate eclairs. We're not sure what did this to you, but we're
perhaps
grateful.
An anvil fell on my balls and it woke me up. Wake me up inside.
Anvil on my balls.
Save me.
Save me from the anvil on my balls.
Dun-dun, dun-dun,
should
dun-dun.
We wrap this
up? Yeah, let's do it. People don't need to hear this shit.
You know what they say about history hoes? We always cite our sources. Oh, take your time.
I closed.
Hey, don't worry. Yeah, we're just sitting here. Yeah, go ahead and scroll.
That's right. For this episode, I got my information from The Books, Creating an American Institution, The Merchandising Genius of JCPenney by Mary Elizabeth Curry, JCPenney, The Man, The Store, and American Agriculture by David Krueger, and 50 Years with the Golden Rule by James Cash Penny Jr.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening to an old-timey podcast.
Please give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. And while you're at it, subscribe. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/oldtimeypodcast. Join the Reddit community, r/oldtimeypodcast. Follow us on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram at oldtimeypodcast. You can also follow us individually on Instagram. She is the luscious Kristen Pitts Caruso. I go by Gaming Historian. And until next time, toodaloo, ta-ta, and cheerio.
Goodbye.